Europe acknowledges the traditional owners of the land this podcast was recorded on. We pay our respect to their elders past, present, and emerging, and extend this to all First Nations people. Hello, and welcome to AREP's podcast, Sustainable Forces, a podcast about people joining forces for the planet. I'm your host, Dr. Michelle Dickinson. Today, we are asking the question, can data boost climate action? To help answer this, I spoke to Professor Dr. Sven Beinhart from the Carbon Risk Real Estate Monitor, which is also known as CREM, Global Scientific and Investor Committee, and Francesca Galeazzi, AREP's Europe Decarbonisation Services Lead. Now, as an engineer, I love data. However, when it comes to decarbonisation and net zero, it just feels like there are so many different terms and approaches involved, and it's sort of easy to get lost in the noise. But we also know that data is so crucial for climate action. That's why for this conversation, I wanted to hear about tangible examples of data use in action. In this episode, Sven discusses the CREM tool that was created in Europe to help the property industry, which is one of the globe's largest greenhouse gas emitters, to upgrade older buildings so they are more energy efficient, which reduces the overall number of aging carbon-emitting buildings. And Francesca shares how she is working with Sven to use the CREM tool on projects in Europe and how it's expanding across the globe. Here's my chat with Sven and Francesca. I hope you find their chat as interesting as I did. Hi, Sven, and welcome to our podcast. Where are you joining us from today?
Hi, Michelle. Thanks for having me. I'm joining you guys today from Austria, Tyrol, where I'm based, but just about heading for Asia Pacific and Australia on one of the very few long distance business trips actually related to CREM.
Amazing. Is it sunny there?
In Tyrol at the moment, not really sunny, but we are actually having pretty good weather lately, yes.
Okay, pretty good. And next, I'd like to welcome Francesca. Thank you for joining us. And where are you today?
Hey, good morning. Really excited to be here today. I'm calling from Berlin, where I'm based. Not sunny at all here. It's rainy and it's getting cold. And finally, it's getting cold because we had such a hot, long summer and we could see climate change in action in our city. So I'm really welcoming the rain and the cold, finally.
So not sunny, but that's okay because we're going to have sunshine in this podcast today as we chat about our topic. So I'm going to start with you, Sven. Tell us a little bit about you and the work that you do.
I'm on one side working at the University of Regensburg. I'm heading there at the Competence Center of Sustainability and ESG. We have that at the university for almost 15 years now. I was the first chair that was dedicated on ESG and sustainability in Germany. Was heading the Competence Center and actually our whole institute for quite a while. We are with 50 FTEs globally, the largest real estate institute at the university. And besides that, we are running in parallel quite a few research projects. Amongst those, CREM is the initiative that is actually consuming most of my time, I have to admit.
Sounds interesting. We will talk a little bit more about that in a second. But Francesca, you work at AREP. Can you tell us about your role there?
I've been working at AREP for 24 years, always in sustainability. So basically all my professional life was a dream as a student, actually, to work for AREP. So I'm really pleased I managed to get that. Working in the same company for over two decades, I think it's only possible if you move around the world a lot. So I started to work in Australia and then UK, India and China. And then since 8 years, I'm in Berlin, where I try to bring this international perspective to my work and where I lead the Europe region decarbonization services to deliver the right solutions, the right processes and approaches to helping our clients to get to net zero, which is the biggest challenge that we're facing at the moment.
You have worked with Sven for a long time. I don't know if it's been 24 years, but can you tell us, Francesca, about how you both started working together?
Well, when CREM launched, we immediately understood that this had the power really to revolutionize the property market because it was really simple and clear. It was telling the market what is a stranded asset, what is a risk to a company in terms of the carbon footprint and excessive carbon footprint in a market that is closely scrutinizing decarbonization claims. And we started to integrate the methodology in our services and our work and engaging with Sven and his team, for example, giving insights back from what we saw in real life applications with clients and in projects, and started to basically talk over the years. And then this year I joined the CREM Global Scientific and Investor Committee, which is a committee that is basically advising CREM on the future progression of this incredible initiative.
It sounds incredible and perfect for today's podcast because we are talking about whether data can boost climate action. Now, I'm a data person, and we know that data is so essential for understanding our carbon footprint and baselining what our emissions actually are. But I'm also confused because there just seem to be so many terms out there. Terms like net zero and carbon neutral and decarbonization. And if I find it confusing, I'm sure that many others will find it confusing too, which makes it difficult to know what to aim for and what this means in practice. So Sven, can I ask you more about this Carbon Risk Real Estate Monitor, or CREM, and the thinking behind it, and also the role that you think that data plays in this initiative?
Sure, Michelle. Well, first of all, I guess we were a bit lucky when we started, as Michelle said, quite a while ago, actually 6 years ago, when we focused on transition risk. We were back then selling our software on actually physical climate risk to the German government and thought, okay, what would be the next big thing for our industry? Looking at reporting requirements and ESG, you can easily come up with 120 KPIs. And we thought, okay, what would be the most pressing one for our industry? And we thought, okay, it's carbon intensity. It's everything around carbon. So we were focusing on this topic of decarbonization with regard to the whole building energy consumption, converting that to carbon intensities per square meter. Since I've been working, as I told you before, Michelle, also for quite a while, just on commercial topics in the industry, I sort of feel the pain of the industry that is always lagging for the connection between ESG and financial data. And I think we were from the very beginning pushing very hard to make sure that we reveal that linkage between, you know, financial implications and the carbon footprint. For instance, we have in our tool, if you convert the energy consumption of your property into carbon intensities, the possibility to benchmark your property against the 1.5 degree decarbonization pathway from now on until 2050 and see whether or not your property is compliant with that one, or whether you have, we call it excess emissions, and the point in time where you sort of cross that benchmark and have from there on excess emissions, we call that stranding point or stranded assets. And now with these excess emissions, these are obviously CO2 emissions of your property that go beyond the sort of 1.5 degree aligned budget that you would expect for that specific property. And when we started, everybody was telling us, you know, why do you have these excess emissions? They are worth nothing. There is no carbon price. So why should you, you know, pretend you have excess emissions and possibly even put a carbon shadow price to that excess emissions and convert that into a present value? And we said, yeah, but you should be ahead of the curve. You should be prepared for what is yet to come. And eventually we saw that around the globe, not just in Europe, but also Asia Pacific, United States, Canada, regardless where you go, you will see that there are carbon pricing schemes and taxation initiatives popping up all over the globe. So actually there is now in a lot of countries a carbon price also related and attached to the carbon intensity of your property. And it makes you, you know, you really have to pay a certain amount for those excess emissions nowadays. So I guess it was good for all market participants that in the very beginning used our voluntary offerings to be prepared to be ahead of the curve. and make sure they know their carbon footprint and what kind of financial implications might be coming along once more regulation is coming to play. So effectively, our offerings, carbon offerings related to the decarbonization of the use phase, are really focusing on benchmarking your property's carbon footprint against 1.5 degree and 2 degree pathways. We have offerings for different countries, different use types, and we are, besides carbon intensity, also offering energy intensity pathways, because clearly you can decarbonize a property without optimizing your energy efficiency at all. So we think both parts of the story are important. You need to be competitive in terms of the energy consumption of your property, and you need to decarbonize until 2050.
I see. And talking about lots of different countries and how scalable it is and, you know, all this complication, one thing I love about this podcast is we love to break down some of these complexities through great examples of things you've worked on and things that you have seen work. Francesca, you've worked on so many projects, but do you have a favorite one that you'd like to share that demonstrates well how data can help with this decarbonization?
I had, the greatest pleasure to work on a lot of different projects, from, you know, master plans and cities to individual buildings. And we have the tendency, I think, to point at specific building projects as, this is my favorite one. But I find that when you talk about individual buildings, you also have a very limited impact. And the impact that you can achieve when you're working at scale, it's for me much more important. For example, in the last 2 years, I've been building a team across the region to do portfolio decarbonization and helping clients to manage their carbon programs for many property clients. And it sounds a bit more abstract, actually, there's a lot of stories of buildings and assets behind those programs. We analyze more than 500 buildings, more than 7 million square meters of buildings, and we got a huge amount of data. So we talk about data for climate action, right? So we started to be able to see insights coming back. And not only on the technical side that Arup understands really, really well, but also on the cost and financial implications of bringing all these portfolios, all those assets to net zero for our clients. And often with very limited data, because what we find out that the industry is really struggling to get consistent data. Often you're only working with benchmarks, only you have inconsistent data that you really don't know where it's coming from. So our work was really to help clients to understand what to do, how to prioritize actions, and taking logic next steps. And I wanted to share here in the podcast like three things I've learned from doing this 7 million square meter decarbonization project. First of all, what we learned that is the cost of transition to net zero is huge. And often the budgets are not really aligned with the scale and the speed that is required. So there's a huge amount of funding and financing opportunities and new business models emerging, and we really need to tap into those because the investments required are going to be significant. Second thing, that often our clients are not fully aware of the risks hidden in their portfolios because of lack of data. And this is what Sven was saying earlier, right? The transitional risk is really important, and there's a lot of also legislation and reporting really pushing our clients to disclose their data. But sometimes they don't even know if what they're disclosing is real, is true. We had a case where we analyzed more than 100 buildings from a client, and we saw that what they were reporting as part of their duties to the sustainable financial disclosure regulations in Europe, what they were reporting was completely deviating from the actual performing of the buildings. So they didn't really know how the buildings were performing, and actually they were badly underperforming compared to what they reported. So there is a huge risk for reputation for clients that report something publicly, and potentially also the valuation of the assets and their portfolios and their investments. So we learned that we always need to do sanity checks on the data we receive and bring our engineering perspective and digital solutions to help our clients understand the data that they have. And a third one, which I think is also really important, that there's an element that is often not prioritized enough, which is the time value of carbon, which is absolutely critical because basically the time when actions take place is really a direct impact on climate action. So understanding your actions over time is also really important. And what was important of the CRAM initiative is that it clearly shows a timeline when actions need to take place. And you see decarbonization really accelerating in the next 10, 15 years, and then a plateau towards 2050, and not waiting another 20 years before things happen. We cannot wait and see, right? Because if we wait and see, the volume of carbon that we're taking out from the atmosphere in 2040 is not going to help to solve the climate crisis. Actually, we're going to see climate change feedback loops accelerating and making impacts across all sectors. And the transition is going to be more costly and messier, and we really don't want to get there. So it's really important that we clients also think about when they're going to do what. And we know that there's very clear guidance, IPCC guidance, on the amount of reduction that is required, no? The famous 7.5% reduction year by year. And we need to get there right now. That's my third point.
I'm feeling the pressure already. And like you talk about, it's complex because budgets are always too small and time is always short. And so, you know, there's a lot of complexities that go around with this. Sven, you must have seen a lot of these complexities come to fruition. Can you give us some of your favorite examples on how you've seen organizations that use your data and tools to help to decarbonize?
Michelle, I'm a bit with Francesca. Of course, showcasing what is possible and best cases, putting that in the limelight is important. But on the other side, we need to really scale up the activities to decarbonize our industry. It's not important that each and every country and property company has one or two nice examples. They need to decarbonize their entire portfolios. So really making sure there is enough pressure, aligning with the industry organizations, and not just showcasing is important. And that's why I guess also CRAM with the global holistic approach has a lot of success. We have until now a coverage of approximately 20% of the institutional property stock globally that has in one way or the other used CRAM for their portfolio. Now we are, for data protection reasons, not tracking what our clients and users are doing. We have freeware offerings, which you can download from our website. But of course, we see due to the emails we get, due to the exchange with market participants, that the coverage is really massive. We have, for instance, just 100 emails on our inbox, on the info inbox every day. So what are the most important aspects? I guess, first of all, the real benefit of CRAM is that you can analyze your portfolio and identify priorities and bad assets where you should start, right? Because most of the market participants, let's face it, they have certain CapEx budgets. They have a certain understanding what they should do, but really using analytical tools like ours is essential to identify where they in real life should start. So setting budgets, starting with retrofits is really important. What our clients are doing most is, of course, they are upgrading their properties in terms of increasing the energy efficiency, so reducing consumption levels. A major step is, of course, to exit, if possible, all fossil fuel combustion on site. And then, of course, use low-hanging fruits. Just as an example, we have a really famous hospitality chain, European chain, and that was 1 year ago saying, you know, Sven, this is all too complicated. It's just, you know, university stuff. We are we have to make sure that we are also meeting our financial obligations. We will not dig into more details because it's too costly. And this guy came back this year and he said, you know, Sven, we because of the market pressure, we looked at the details. And actually, it was, as you said, we were aiming at and achieving 20% energy reduction without any significant investments, because they were just looking at the in detail looking at the low-hanging fruit, which means smart metering, you know, intelligent light switches and so on. And that actually led to a like-for-like comparison change of 20%, minus 20%, and that's without any significant investments. And I guess that these kind of portfolio approaches are important, especially in times where we are seeing within our markets increasing interest rates. And of course, that puts a lot of pressure on investments, on CapEx spending. And we need to be smart, right? We need to be make sure that we don't take decarbonization and ESG-related aspects off the plate, because it's essentially ensuring our USP and our competitive position in the future. But we need to make sure that we do smart investments like PVs, like heat pumps, and so on. And I think all these aspects are possible. And we need to bear in mind that even though we are looking at huge investments, as Francesco was saying, you need to replace your gas heating at some point in time until 2050 anyhow. So just make sure you're not reinstalling another one, but you change the energy source to renewable energies, right? And looking at, for instance, Germany, we saw that with the energy crisis now from the Ukraine and so on during the last years, we were struggling with getting enough gas. Looking at what amount of oil combustion we exited on asset level during the last 15 years, we were increasing the amount of gas combustion in the same period, approximately at the same percentage. So we were just, you know, replacing one fossil fuel combustion component by another instead of making smart investments into renewables. And I just hope that our industry moving forward is, you know, really seeing that opportunity and embraces, even though we are facing a more complicated economic environment, the positive aspects of ESG-related investments.
Oh, you make it sound so simple. We just need to replace the odd gas heater and think about heat pumps. Talk about making things simple. Francesca, can you talk to us a little bit about a digital tool that's called CRISP and how that might be helpful to make things more simple?
Absolutely. I couldn't wait. Actually, I was about to say, hey, but actually there are solutions out here. I mean, things are complex, but I think also solutions are there. So we have developed on the back of the fantastic work that CREM has initiated and the methodology, a digital solution that helps clients with large property portfolio to screen their assets and their portfolios for what we call carbon-related risks. So mapping assets against CREM decarbonization pathways. More and more we look at the science-based target aligned pathways as the most robust ones, really moving away from the old 2 degrees world that we don't want to see anymore, helping clients really look at what needs to be done to achieve net zero. And CRISP stands for Carbon Risk Screening Impact of Portfolios. It's literally a digital platform where clients can gather technical and economic assessments of their assets and a clear prioritization of the carbon reduction measures that they need to reduce and avoid the valuation of the assets. But what we're also doing, we're helping clients to create their own scenarios because we recognize that once consultants provide, say, an ideal roadmap of how an entire portfolio might meet net zero, and we provide technical solutions and costs, then the reality kicks in that those roadmaps are not implemented in the time and in the volume that we might have identified. Actually, some clients might accelerate certain actions. Haven't seen a lot of that yet. Or things might have been pushed back a little bit, for example, because of the energy crisis or the price spikes, right? So certain programs are kind of lagging behind. And we want to make sure that clients can also test different scenarios after we give them a roadmap. So in this tool, we provide them with the ideal decarbonization roadmap for, say, the hundreds of the assets or thousands in their portfolios, but then giving them also the chance to test different scenarios, different solutions, look at what will happen if they were rolling out a full new program, for example. And so they can really manage their portfolio decarbonization over time. And the last thing we want is to provide, I don't know, a report or decarbonization study that sits in a drawer and is never actualized. So it's really important that kind of digital solutions now give us the opportunity to bring our work to life and also to make it dynamic and reflecting the reality of, you know, the managing assets, managing buildings. So we're really excited about this because I think it's exactly what was missing in the market. And we're happy that, you know, also through our engineering powerhouse, we were able to bring all of that knowledge into a digital solution that's pretty flexible.
I love it. And now we're going to talk about you two working together. One of the things we showcase on this podcast is how the power of partnership is critical for sustainable development. Sven, it's been fascinating to hear about your methodology and the impact that it makes across the world. But can you talk to me about partnership and why it's important to support your projects?
Yeah, I guess, first of all, even though it might be a partnership between Arup and CRIM as an organization or company, I think most important are, of course, also the personal partnerships in this case and personal support. So I would really like to thank you again, Francesca, for your fabulous support with best cases on our latest UN report. But on a more general point, I think that's really key for our industry, especially for industry organizations. We've seen so many industry organizations doing fabulous work in a specific country on decarbonization, on ESG, and, you know, coming up with one scoring year and one, you know, initiative on, I don't know, investor engagement there. But I guess what we have to acknowledge is that the industry is really embracing global solutions, especially since we are running out of time. We have global investors that are, of course, the peers in this investment community, and the smaller ones will follow. So if, I don't know, Seabury Global Investors, if, you know, I don't know, Heinz or some of the really big investors are doing something, they would like to see a global approach and would like to see global solutions. And that's, I learned that over time, I have to say that actually that was part of the success story of CRAM, I guess, that we were aiming from the very beginning for global alignment. We have the support of IGCC, Net Zero Asset Owner Alliance, INREF, EPRA, PKF, GRASP, SBTI, Francesca mentioned that already, so, and many, many more. And I think that is really crucial to make sure that we have a unified and understandable approach for the industry that everybody can follow, because of course, you can, you know, slyly twist and turn methodologies and come up with different solutions for different markets. Like we've seen that for the green labelings. But again, I mean, what's the worth in, what's the benefit in having, you know, 7 property labels on one property that I've seen at one point? It doesn't really help the ESG credentials of that property. And it might be confusing from, you know, market participants' point of view. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm a big fan of you know, LEED, BREEAM, DGNB, and so on. But I guess for decarbonization, I hope we are, and I think with CRAM, we haven't done the same thing, because we were really aiming for a holistic and unified approach globally. Besides the industry organizations that I was mentioning, we were trying to partner with big investors from the very beginning. We have the support of Norges States Fund, APG, PGGM, so really the big capital sources globally, JPIF in Japan, which was for us a big door opener in Japan, and Cambridge Ivanhoe in Canada, just to name a few of them. And I think that's really key to make sure that you get trust and understanding and support of the big institutional investors, and then others will follow. We have, besides these partnerships, of course, a lot of consultancies, and we call it service partners, that do work in the industry related to CRAM. And that is really, I think, for investors, a big benefit, because as we've discussed several times in this podcast, data is key, and a lot of market participants are still having limited resources in their ESG departments and huge activities that need to be accomplished. So really having that support from external specialists and consultants that are focusing on the details of decarbonization is important. And besides that, we have lately accomplished to arrange quite a few license agreements with partners that are using in their transition risk tools the CRAM pathways, again, making sure that on one side we have one benchmark globally, which is the CRAM benchmark, and on the other side, of course, having the support of MSCI, Measurable, DeepKey, and many other market participants that are offering tools, benchmarks, solutions in the industry.
Very good. So interesting. That was a lot of different projects and collaborations. But Francesca, I'm going to see if there are any left in there. Can you talk a little bit about how you've partnered with Sven and how important this work is for Arup?
Partnering with CRAM is really important for Arup because it's like the most influential initiative in property clients. And globally, and reaching out to a global audience, no? It started with Europe first. But immediately we saw that our clients are actually all connected and they're all playing in the global markets. So, real estate, clients, also located elsewhere, they might want to access the European market or vice versa, might all need to report on the same topics. So, CRAM is now expanding in the US and in East Asia. And what we've done is supporting them, for example, with technical expertise in the US and in East Asia. So that Arup is always like behind those really important initiatives. And of course, in general, partnerships are very important for us because like the World Green Building Council or the World Business Council for Sustainable Development, the Ellen MacArthur Foundation, we have many, also global important partnerships that really help us push ourselves forward, and also we can help them grow by benefiting from our expertise and knowledge. And I think what is important to see here, one thing that that Sven was saying earlier on partnerships and business models, for example, aligning with banks and funding initiatives. This is a very exciting space that is taking shape right now. I would say only in the last few years, we're seeing new business models emerging where funding and financing starts to be much more connected to decarbonization, to providing actual proof of progress. We see energy providers often aligning with technical specialists or consultants like us, data scientists and banks to get together to finance the transition. We see, for example, the Net Zero Banking Alliance making like big claims about billions of investments in this space in the next few years. So we also sometimes feel like, the decarbonization, effort is so overwhelmingly big and complex, but there's also a lot of solutions. Technical, as we saw before, sometimes it's about the boiler needs to go, but also about financial solutions, which are related to demonstrable progress. And so the path is clear, and also the solutions that started to come through are clear in terms of this. There are technical solutions, there's money behind it. So let's get on the case.
Getting on the case. I love how today we've talked about how lots of little small changes actually can make a huge impact when you look at all of these things added together. It makes things start to feel like they're achievable to the individual as well as to the organization. Now, there are going to be people listening who have been inspired by today's content. There's so much to think about, and they might want to get started on their own journey around collecting data to boost climate action. So Francesca, I'm going to start with you. For people who want to start using data to decarbonize, what are your top tips for how they can get started?
Absolutely. So I love that you said journey, because actually decarbonizing the built environment is a journey, and there's a lot of small steps in along that journey, and start to measure their full footprint, to start to understand the full scope emissions, right? And get support from specialists because it's kind of complex to gather all the data. And once you get the data and understand where you are, make clear and measurable commitments and publicly disclose your commitments. And because that's really, really important. For example, what the Science Based Target Initiative does is really powerful because your commitment then is public and you need to move and get, you know, get your act together as a firm with a very clear pathway, with very clear steps. And being able to prioritize actions is really important rather than wait and see, because as I said earlier, things might get costly and more complicated in the future, and then roll out a program. So it's not that complicated, but what, you know, what we know is, that there's still viable pathways to get to 2050 net zero. It's kind of narrow and will require really unprecedented transformation. So it's really important to follow the kind of, I would say, the mantra to get your data together. Could be painful at the beginning. Once you have your data, you can make informed decisions. And there's tons of smart solutions to help you, so you don't need to do it all by yourself. Implement your actions now. So again, my mantra is always don't wait and see. And it's really, really important that we start to see this net zero solutions rolling out as soon as possible. And because it's also fundamental to for a company to be positioned among the early adopters. And continuously monitoring progress and reassess where you are. So the initial actions might need to be reassessed continuously, might need to be communicated continuously, making sure that progress is real and that you can be agile and reassess your what you are in your journey. And when I said communicate was my last point, communicate is really important because we also need positive news. I find that there's too much doom and gloom in our space, in sustainability, in decarbonization, and climate action. And we want to see progress. We want to see clients telling us that they invested and has resulted in much better positioning of the company, much happier workforce, much happier clients and customers. And we need to see that. I need to hear the positive news and the hopeful news continuously.
Talk about positive. I think you're the most positive, passionate person I've ever spoken to about this subject. And it's super contagious. So that's my top tip. Everybody come speak to you, because really everything I've talked to you about this makes me so excited. So that's my little tip for the day. Sven, I'm going to quote you here. You said before that data is key. So do you have some tips or some takeaways for our listeners who want to start collecting and using data today?
Well, I guess there are some, with regard to data, there are some fascinating tools and opportunities around. Of course, Arup's solution is key here, but there are others, as Francesca mentioned. So I think it's really no problem anymore to get your hands on data. There are smart metering solutions. There is data exchange with tenants and so on. So really, it's just a question of doing it. But maybe as a sort of takeaway, I perceive it as quite strange, because now we have a situation where markets are facing downwards a bit because of the interest rate increases. So we are seeing devaluations of properties, and the very few buyers that are, at least in Europe at the moment, still around, they have the choice to select what kind of property they would like to buy. And like 2 or 3 years ago, when we were still seeing this boom, everybody was telling me, yeah, but we don't see the huge price discrepancies between energy efficient properties and, you know, decarbonized properties. And whether it's a gas heating or, you know, a heat pump, it doesn't make any price difference. And to be honest, to be fair, I think 2 or 3 years ago, that was really the case, because some transaction managers that were on the buy side were really just lucky to get their hands on whatever property they could get, even though they had the support of Arup or some other, you know, really good advice with regard to the ESG due diligence that they were doing. So they had the figures on their table, but still they were sort of jumping over that issue. and just did the deal. And now we see that is completely different, especially in Europe. We see a lot of transaction with, you know, not just CRM, but also taxonomy compliance and so on. And the very few buyers that are still around, they are making huge discounts if they have to buy brown property. They are factoring in the results that Francesca, for instance, is calculating in ESG due diligence. And they say, okay, if you want to sell me this property, you either have to fix it yourself or we are making a discount because we need to make sure that it's CRM compliant. We want to get it taxonomy aligned and so on. So my advice is really, even though economic environment is getting harder and CapEx spending is getting a bit more tight because we don't have the huge budgets anymore, we still should focus on the long-term implications and we need to make sure that our properties are competitive and making smart investments in the ESG is a wise thing to do. And maybe it's even a good business case to focus on the very many brown properties that are on the market. Maybe it's a possibility to buy them at a huge discount and make a business case to decarbonize these properties.
I feel like there's a bargain in there that's actually going to help us to save the planet. Now, sadly, that is all the time that we have for on this episode. Thank you so much for listening. There's so much rich data, I think, that we can take away and some real action items that we can all use to create a more sustainable future using data. Francesca and Sven, thank you so much for your insights and for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks for your great moderation. Thanks a lot, Michelle.
That was so fascinating, especially the inner workings of the CRM tool and how important it is to make our decarbonisation efforts scalable. If you want more detailed information, there are links in the show notes to the projects that we spoke about. In our next episode, I'll be chatting with Louise Heron, who is CEO at the Sydney Opera House, and Tristram Carfrae, who is Arup's Global Deputy Chair, to celebrate the Sydney Opera House's 50th anniversary and unpack how partnership can leave a legacy. Don't forget to leave us a review and subscribe to Sustainable Forces on your favourite streaming service.